Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 273. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
All the way from sunny Ely, Minnesota.
All right.
The gateway to the Boundary Waters canoe area, but I'm not in a canoe.
You're not.
Not yet.
But maybe Phil is. Phil's off today, and no, actually he's got basketball things with his daughter, and... I was up in Ely this summer, and it's a great little town. My first time I've ever been there, and actually I drove outside of town to go see Sigurd Olsen's, the environmentalist, the guy that really
cabin.
Was. Yeah, I went out and saw his cabin and so on, and actually was coming back and saw a lynx, which I've never seen before, running across the road. So
you're kidding.
Cool. No. I guess they're really rare to see, too, because they're skittish.
Yeah. But. Wow. Yeah, they got bears up here. They got moose. They got a bear center. They probably have a moose center, for all I know.
Yeah.
They got it all up here.
Do they have any Thickens centers? So cages? Yeah, yuck.
Not yet, but, we're at the art fair up here, the Blueberry Art Festival, and, it's a gorgeous day. It's going to be, like, high of 81, and that's like, total blue sky, going to be sunny all day. We lucked out this year. Last year, it just rained, and the wind blew, and it was, like, the highest high of the 3 days we were here was, like, 59. And, it was just a disaster, but this year looks a lot better.
Well, there's been many times I've been on the Boundary Waters, and during the 6 or 8 days a year where it's beautiful, otherwise it's rainy and cold, and
this time of year is usually pretty good up here, though. This is the time to be up here, and the town is rocking. I mean, you'll never see as many canoes on top of cars and trucks as you do going by here on 169, goes right through the middle of town. So, great place.
Well, so there's a few big stories, mostly national, but some interesting things happening here locally. Tim, you found this thing about the Target app, which lets shoppers snap photos. I hadn't even heard of this.
Yeah, it came out this week, and basically it allows you to use your smartphone to order stuff from Target ads in either their, the newspaper supplements or in any of the national advertising they're doing in magazines. And you just basically take a picture of it, and it pops up, and you can order stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool app, and they're going to do it, I guess, with one of their catalogs for back to school. So that's smart, because you'd think that college students would have smartphones. I'll use this.
What do they call the app? Is it just called Snap or something? Or
In a Snap.
Yeah. Snap. In a Snap. Okay. They're actually not the first to do this, though, I've heard.
No, this has been out for a while with various other companies doing it, but I just thought I would put it in since Target is continuing their mobile app development stuff.
Well, and then with that Dinky Town store that they put up, they're clearly making modifications to their strategies.
Yeah, no, and it's Target Express, and it's like a Walgreens size or CVS sized Target. So for more urban areas, this is a really smart idea.
Yeah, I think so too.
When we were down in Arkansas in Bentonville, where Walmart is headquartered, and they had one called Walmart To Go. And it was basically a gas station that had a slightly larger a convenience area. But they had sort of like plucked in there, a deli and various other things from Walmart. And it actually was an interesting kind of idea. I don't know if they're going to expand outside of Bentonville, but they're obviously experimenting with similar types of ideas.
Oh, I think they probably got that on a fast track because they don't want Target getting one step ahead of them. I think they've been working on that for quite a while. In fact, I thought they had them in some other cities.
Yeah, they might.
I could be wrong. Okay. Did I even read that they might go into New York City? That might be like an obviously an urban kind of a thing, a smaller store footprint, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it was in this particular article, but I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I can't remember where now, but I mean, it makes sense because, you know, Best Buy's actually had great luck with the mobile strategy and, you know, doing small stores, just leveraging the brand.
And Target does have that downtown store in Nicolet too, which is one of their urban experiments. So that's taking a regular Target store and slicing it up over, you know, two or three stories.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I haven't even seen that. I guess I don't get to that part of downtown. So they don't call that a Target Express. That's a little different, huh?
Yeah, that's their urban Target. I forgot what they probably have a name for it, but it's a full size Target store.
Yeah.
It's not like this, which is a much smaller, you know, more limited selection kind of place.
Well, you know, I've noticed in Europe that the multi-level mass merchant type of store is very prevalent. You know, where you go
especially
up four
in
or five stories.
Especially in Germany, they've got those crazy department stores that have, you know, carry everything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Do they have some lady or some guy on the elevator wearing white gloves and then you say ninth floor please, and then it opens and they say ladies lingerie or remember the old days down at Dayton's? They actually had, well, I can hardly remember, but they used to have elevator operators in some of these stores, or like in Young Quinlan in the old days of retail in downtown, you know.
Well, all I remember is going down to Dayton's downtown Minneapolis with my grandmother. And my mom made me wear a sport coat and a tie.
Oh my God.
Because we were going to have lunch in the, whatever the name of the restaurant was.
Not the Oak Grill, because that was men only.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but yeah, it was some restaurant there that was in Dayton's, and I had to get all duded up and.
Yeah, I remember they had two or three restaurants up there on that. Was that the 12th floor or something like that?
And yeah. Yeah.
When I worked at Dayton's in college, they still had the Oak Grill, and it was still men only. And you definitely had to be dressed properly to go in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, for anybody listening that either isn't from here or maybe is significantly younger than me, there was a time when I was a manufacturer's rep out of college selling consumer electronics. We had PhoneMate and Hitachi and Casio and all these different consumer electronic lines. And every year, Dayton's would have their downtown electronics event down in the, not the auditorium, but, you know, that one venue they've got in the Dayton's, well, now it's Macy's, but in that particular store. And it was a must-go-to event. And everybody, I mean, the lines were incredible. And they sold a lot of electronics. Did a great job, but
yeah, they had everything in those days. They really did. I worked in the ski shop. Remember that?
God, I don't.
They actually sold skis. Yeah, right. And ski wear, and oh yeah, it was a big deal. And we must say, for those who don't realize it, that was the original corporation that is now Target.
Right.
Dayton Hudson changed its name to Target Corp. Not all that long ago, wasn't that 15, 20 years ago?
Right.
If that. So Target was an offshoot, a startup from a larger corporation, and began as one or two stores in suburban Twin Cities, and has grown to what is it now? My gosh, 1,000 plus stores.
Right.
I don't even know.
Well, so University of Minnesota, they won the Esri Climate Resilience App Challenge. Boy, what a mouthful.
I wanted to put this in because, you know, there's not a lot written about it. There's a little blurb in a blog. But if you go to the challenge site, you can see that they did win for their solar suitability analysis website, which they have a link to, which is a very interesting looking Google Maps mashup to help people figure out what places are best for solar radiation to put solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very interesting. thing. And then, you know, they did this. Apparently, the competition was in March through June, but the winners were only announced a week or so ago.
Right. Well, and this
and there and I was going to say they're University of Minnesota engineering students for the most part. Is that what we're what the group is?
It didn't really say, but I'm assuming it is.
Yeah, it would have to be techies.
Yep. It's this is a developed through a semester long group project in the U of M Masters of Geographic Information Science program.
Oh, yeah, GIS, yeah. GIS people, yeah.
Yeah, it says the project team consisted of 7 UMN graduate students and a faculty advisor. So, yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, it's good on them.
Well, yeah, and it's hope they get some money out of it.
Well, and you know what's interesting about this is that this particular Google Map mashup, you know, there is a whole discipline around solar panel placement that I had no idea. I started reading this one night on a Wikipedia article that I got linked to from another site, and I started going through this and thinking, oh my God, I mean, if you're an installer of solar panels, you know, you need an undergrad degree in solar panel placement. I mean, it was amazing. So this is not a trivial app for anybody that's in the space.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they can go on to successful careers in solar energy.
There we go.
I just hope they don't start another Solyndra, but that's another topic for another podcast.
No kidding. Yeah. I love this this article by Julio. He did one on Car2Go going metro-wide with this St. Paul startup.
I find this interesting that, you know, he's done stories on Lyft and Uber and other, you know, taxi kind of services. But this is kind of like, what is it? Car,
it's like the bike.
Yeah. So this is so like
you
just, a...
Yeah, you need one, you go get one.
It's like a rental, but you can rent it for like 2 hours, you know? You don't have to rent the car for the day.
Right.
So similar to Our Car, I guess, was the other startup that I think is in Minneapolis.
I think that's in St. Paul too, isn't it? Our Car?
Yeah.
We got two of these in the Twin Cities?
Yeah. Our Car, you're right. It does say St. Paul-based Our Car. I've only seen them over in Minneapolis, but anywho... But interesting the way that mobile tech is disrupting these industries.
Absolutely. Well, and being able to remotely lock and unlock cars, for example, and to be able to track them. So, I mean, if you own the cars and you want to make sure that you know where they are and what speed they're going and things of that nature, you've got all the technology to be able to do that. So, there's a real interesting convergence of all the things that needed to happen in order to make something like this a reality.
So does he say if this startup, I haven't read the whole story, does he say if they had to raise capital? And I assume they would. How many cars do they have? That would take money, right? Well, yeah, that would take serious money.
Yeah.
Unless they just put it all on their credit cards.
But they're all smart cars, I think. So smart cars are what, 15 grand, something like that, 10, 15 grand?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're more like 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you buy 180 it's basically of these,
like
half, you
know. it's a lot of money. Yeah, for sure. So I don't know if he gets into that or not. But interesting that we would have two in our town, in our metro area.
I guess there's demand for it. And if you live downtown, you know, you might not even have a car. So this may be the only way that you can do shopping or whatever.
Yep. Well, in fact, Julio might even be one of those kind of people. Well, he must have a car I guess I don't know. He lives downtown. He works downtown St. Paul, lives there.
Yeah.
Or no, he moved out of downtown and bought the house, which is probably no more than 2 or 3 miles from downtown. But yeah, he might ride the bus. I guess I don't know.
Well,
never asked him.
So what I find interesting is if you talk to somebody, I don't know anybody that's a cab driver, but a guy I went to high school with has a small limo company. He's got 3 limos and 2 guys working for him that drive. And And he and I talked about this very, very briefly because I bumped into him at a caribou just this past week. We were talking about stuff, and I said, so, you know, what do you think about all the car startup, you know, rental and ride sharing and all that kind of stuff? And he said, well, you know, first of all, my clientele is not going to call some guy who's going to drive up in a Chevy Cavalier to pick him up. You know, he's going to want to, he or she is going to want to ride in style. But he said, here's the one thing with like car sharing. He said, you would not believe the stuff that happens in a car. And he said, imagine dropping off a car and somebody's been in there with their 2-year-old who's rooped lunch all over the seat. And they just said, well, you know, and they get out of the car and leave rather than clean it up, you know? Oh, and he said, that kind of stuff happens all the time. So he said, that's what I'm going to think is really interesting is what kinds of experiences are people going to have when they pick up a car to go and the person that was in there, you know, left trash all over the place. And I'm assuming there's things built into this as a system where if you do that, the next person gets in, they can say, hey, it was trashed.
They charge you. Yeah. They charge you for cleanup. They got they got the puke thing covered real well. But and by the way, when he says if somebody pulls up in a Chevy, whatever, what about Uber? They don't pull up in that. They pull up in a black Lincoln Town Car. So he's got competition with Uber.
Yeah, very true.
And they're definitely in the Twin Cities. And I was going to try it in Denver, and it was way more expensive than a cab. So I said, screw it.
Oh, really?
But people love it. Yeah. I was going to try it at LaGuardia. When I went to that GigaOM event, and I thought, oh, okay, I'm in New York. Uber operates here, although they've had trouble operating there. I thought, I'm going to give this doggone thing a try. And it was at least 30-40% higher than what I'd been told the flat cab fare was, but they've got a really good deal on flat price cab fare from LaGuardia into Manhattan. So maybe that was it. They've got a subsidized deal or something. I don't know.
Well, the pricing for Uber does change depending on demand.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this was like, you know, this was like 11 a.m. or 1 p.m. It wasn't really a high demand time. Might have even been earlier than that. It might have been like 10 a.m. But anyway. Yeah, that's the only time I was gonna try it and bailed out because I'm too cheap.
Yeah,
but, well, I would have tried it, more? I would not have puked in the back seat.
Yeah, there we go. You would if I was driving, but you know.
Yeah, the way you drive, I probably would. I'd be all white knuckled and puking.
Yeah, the Steve Borse School of Aggressive Driving is in session. So, you know, speaking of being at danger of getting hurt in a car, how's that for a segue?
I love that.
This Eden Prairie company, Spoke, renamed themselves Spoke, S-P-O-K.
How come they don't have the E?
I don't know.
Probably someone else has a trademark on it.
That's the big answer. They didn't want to pay for it, but then somebody might be using it as a business. So that's why I said they didn't buy a vowel, you know. I mean, if somebody did have that sitting on it, they would want probably at least, you know, 25, 50 grand, maybe a lot more than that. A lot of companies just won't do that. I've had companies, I do naming, and I've had companies cheap out on spending $2,500.
Graham, there's a ton of wind noise on your microphone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll I need to adjust my window.
Okay. Thank you.
That will help.
I was going to say, are you walking down the street?
Yeah, he took his laptop out and is walking around.
I'm sitting in the car, but it's kind of hot with all the windows up, you know. And so you're either going to have wind noise or you're going to have engine noise. Take your pick.
Wait a minute now. You're not willing to get sweaty for the Minivate Gang podcast? Is that what I'm hearing?
Hell yeah. Hell no, I'm not.
So anyway, so these guys at Spoke, they're predominantly in the healthcare sector. And what I found interesting is that, you know, the whole point of this is if somebody calls in with an emergency, up will pop more information about the person and than just a caller ID. And this is going to get more and more useful as electronic health records come into play. Because if you call, you know, an urgent care center with a phone and all of a sudden up pops your electronic health record that gives the person all kinds of information, I think that would be incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, and yeah, I was going to say electronic health records are already very much in use in many, many major centers. Fairview Health Services, which I believe that's the major customer in this article that was talked about, right?
Yeah.
They're very big into EHR, as we call it. And one of the startups at Treehouse Health is working with Fairview to improve their EHR system, electronic health record system. So, yeah, I've been hearing all about that. And now this company appears to have a very strong, customer in Fairview. But they've been around. This Amcom's been around for quite some time, and they got acquired by USA Mobility in 2011. And apparently USA Mobility was instrumental in them renaming the Amcom division Spoke.
But wouldn't there be like privacy concerns about merging healthcare information with something that's used like this in a call dispatch sort of thing?
You would surely think. Did it touch on that in the article? I can't remember.
I don't think so. I scanned through it. There's got to be some disclosure or some sort of opt-in that the patient has to do to use all this information, I would think. Unless they're just using publicly available information.
Yeah, I don't know, because the HIPAA regulations around security for patient any records are...
Yeah,
is extremely stringent. So, yeah, but apparently they've dealt with that because they're up and running. And, I mean, this is a big successful business for them, apparently, for Amcom, which is now Spoke. And I guess I don't know if it's their total business or if it's just part of what they do. But didn't it say they have 100 or 200 employees or something in Eden Prairie? I mean, they're a pretty big outfit. They've been around for a while. Yeah, so I guess I don't know if this is all they do in that group or not, but
200 million revenue a year. That's a fairly fairly big size company.
Yeah, it says 110 employees now, expected to grow to 120 by end of year. So maybe this is their whole business now. But anyway, another Minnesota startup that is doing great things. I mean, you know, 5, 6, 8 years ago, they were just getting going. I don't know when they actually launched, but it's not all that long ago. So, yeah, another big growth story.
Well, and speaking of Minnesota connections, I loved your article about TrueScribe.
Yeah.
There'll be a link in the show notes, obviously, with Weird Al Yankovic. But you know what's so funny? Is I don't exactly follow Weird Al. My son still thinks he's a hoot, but
he is funny.
His new album has like 8 really successful songs on it. Apparently, the buzz is that the guy's really knocked it out of the park. So talk about perfect timing for TrueScribe to use him as kind of a spokesmodel.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And the Wall Street Journal wrote it up on one of their entertainment blogs. And, apparently this is the 8th song to be released on that album. And each had a video. And apparently the reviewers have been following all the songs. And when you read the comments on the Wall Street Journal posts, I mean, people just love this album. And Little Old TrueScribe, which we don't hear much about in the Twin Cities, because most of the company is in Madison, but the co-founder is in the Twin Cities, Andrew Herkert, and he heads their sales group in downtown St. Paul. Oh. And I had a chance to meet him at University of St. Thomas whenever that was, last fall or early this year, when they do their Fowler business challenge, and we were judges on the same team, and he had me over. We had lunch, and I learned all about this, and I just love what they do, the Scribology, this whiteboard technology that they've perfected. And did you happen to look at their client logos on their site?
I mean,
they're working with huge Fortune 100 companies, and multiple times. I mean, they have so much business, they don't know what to do with it. Well, I mean, you know, we got Walmart, and I can't even remember who all else, but this one really got them onto the map. With Weird Al, you know.
Well, so for those who don't know what whiteboarding is, I know you've seen the videos where you see somebody's hand and they're sketching something out, and they're drawing out a concept, you know, so here's this and here's that. I mean, it's almost like somebody standing in front of a whiteboard laying out their architecture for some IT thing or whatever, but it's being used for all kinds of conceptual
messaging.
Communication.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep. And messaging. Yep.
Sometimes it's a lot easier to have, you know, a human saying, okay, so let me show you this. Because even though I have to say I hate videos where you want to get somebody's value proposition in your head, so you click the video and it starts out, here's John. John is traveling. Here's Jane. Jane is back in the office. And I just roll my eyes. It's like, oh God, seriously, I got to sit through 3 minutes of these little cartoon icon characters.
Well, these guys, though, TrueScribe, I mean, yeah, they get right to the heart of the matter, and it's all fast action. I mean, it's so tightly edited and so well done. I mean, they do a lot of 30-second, you know, 45-second things, but maybe more of it is longer form, 3 to 5 minute. But you know what? Most of what they did early on, and I'm sure they still do a ton of it, is internal communications and training. Is a huge, huge thing. I think a lot of what they've done for Walmart falls into that category.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, these guys are so good, and the way the things are scripted. I mean, it isn't just the cool visuals. You know, it's the scripting is so well done, and you know, I know that they use outside writers, and sometimes maybe the corporation does the scripting, and they consult with them or advise them on how to improve the script. But but anyway, it's another kind of Minnesota startup story, even though the cheeseheads are most of them are cheeseheads over in Madison. They have, I don't know, 20 or 30 employees in total, I think. So,
and they have nothing to do over there because they don't have any sports teams to root for or anything.
That's
so,
right. That's right.
They've got to be, they have to have something to do. So
why
not start up a company?
Right.
Oh man.
Yeah, those doggone Packers.
So it's easy for me to say. Okay, so the whole thing about Apple reporting their $7.7 billion profit is an article, and I will look to find the link to put in the show notes. But it's about Apple's R&D and also their supplier commits, where they've actually committed to various suppliers for building buying components so they can build product and so on, is the highest it's ever been in the June quarter.
Yeah. And well, that's part of their strategy, though. That's a Tim Cook thing where they just bought up all sorts of components so they could scale their business so quickly while blocking others for getting the same sort of components.
Right, like the sapphire glass.
Yeah.
You know, they're the only ones that'll have that.
Well, they built their own factory for it. Mm-hmm. So, yep.
Is that the one in Arizona?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
But yeah, this is good. Really.
Well, this is good news.
I think a lot of people thought that they would probably underperform, and they were right inside their guidance, and I guess right at what Wall Street thought. So this is sort of somewhat unexpected that they would have a quarter this strong. So they're going to go into the traditionally heavy quarters, especially when they introduce new products later in the year, and they should be able to really blow the locks off at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be a huge fall. Yeah, and yeah, the stock has been marching up too. It's 97 2/3, I think, now. So well, yeah, that,
but you know, this story that came out this past week doesn't seem to have had a lot of effect. This is the one about the forensic scientist and author Jonathan Zdarsky. Is that how you pronounce it, do you think?
Close enough.
Yeah. He did a talk called Hackers at the Hackers on Planet Earth, the Hope X, where Edward Snowden had spoken as well and so on. But he did this slide deck called Identifying Backdoors, Attack Points, and Surveillance Mechanisms in iOS Devices. And you really have to go through the white paper, which I actually read. I went through it, and it's not as alarming as I originally thought either, because everybody's going, oh, my God, backdoors, backdoors, backdoors. Well, it's really not that. And also, Apple has come out with statements on how these things are used. The point, though, is that they are being used. There are there's the ability to obtain data from the phones that should not be exposed. And even though it's not an official back door, perhaps it's something that isn't locked down. And
yeah,
that's a real concern. It's a huge concern.
Sure. Yeah. And you're going to find that Android would have a more difficult time doing this because it's open source and so many people have their eyes on the code.
Yeah.
That if they did have similar types of things, and they weren't open about it, people would find them very quickly once they pushed out the latest builds to the open source project. Apple being closed source and being secretive, you know, that these types of stories tend to get more play, I think, or a bigger deal, because it looks like something is, they're doing something behind the scenes, you know, or they're
nefarious.
They're in cahoots with the NSA or whatnot, which they probably aren't. This is probably something that is just for internal use or whatever, but it could be used for those kinds of nefarious things.
Yeah. Well, and there are commercial software tools that are in fact available that if you have access to the physical device and it hasn't been turned off, which I want to expound upon in a second, that you are able to grab all this data. So the one thing that a lot of people don't know, and I frankly didn't even really think about it, is the lock. If you have a code set up on your iPhone, let's say, or you're using the Touch ID, is all that does is lock the user interface. It doesn't lock access to any of the data. Everything is still running and everything is still available. And so if you go through security and they grab your iPhone because suddenly you're looked at as a terrorist and they plug it into one of these commercial tools, they're able to bypass that GUI user interface lock and have access to all the data exposed. But if you power your device down, it re-encrypts all your data, shuts everything down and re-encrypts it. And so then even if you have physical access to the device, they have to have your passcode to get into it. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'll have to remember that if I ever become a criminal.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let me finish my notes here. No, I'm.
But you know what? You're so suspicious, Graham. There's a likelihood that you're gonna get nailed. But yeah, I see that you grabbed a whole bunch of different articles here, Tim. We'll put those in the show notes so people, if they want to poke around, they can.
Yeah.
And get into a little bit more, but.
So I guess the net is don't worry too much. Yeah. I mean, people to use these backdoors, they have to have physical access to the iPhone.
Right.
So.
Yep.
I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Well, Jonathan was worried that because of Wi-Fi sync with your devices, that it would be available through Wi-Fi as well.
Oh,
with commercial tools. So that was one of the things that hasn't been confirmed yet. But we'll see what happens. We'll see if Apple makes a change in iOS 8. They still have time.
They do
that. So,
well, speaking of time,
I was going to say, when do we get iOS 8?
Later in the year, probably when the new iPhone ships. So it'll probably be
September,
October timeframe.
Concurrent. Yeah.
So what time is it?
It's I time.
Oh.
Yeah.
So last time I thought that, you know, I whatever Apple does, whatever their first wearable, I really don't see it having a screen. And now they get this patent on it's called iTime in the patent thing. And it looks like it does have a screen.
Yeah.
Also looks like it comes in multiple sizes. So I guess that way they can address the issue of having a smaller one for women and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, well, the strap is a major part of this patent.
Yeah, right. There's lots of sensors and all sorts of other things in the strap. So that part of it I was right about. But
well, and that fits right in with HealthKit as using it as a device. But also what was really fascinating to me in this article about the patent, which we'll have a link in the show notes to, is this PicoNet, the personal wireless environment, so that the watch will talk to iPhones, laptops, you know, your desktop computer, whatever. And obviously that's what has to happen with it, but it should be interesting to see what apps come out along with it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there'll be healthcare related or fitness related sorts of apps. But it looks like messaging is definitely part of what they're looking to do, unless that iTime screen is basically just a digital watch. That'd be pretty funny, wouldn't it? If they just came out with a digital watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
with a band that had all these sensors in it.
Well, it'd be funnier if it was a quartz movement and just had sweep second hand. Yeah.
Well, you know, there was talk about them, rumors about them, you know, talking with Swatch. And I saw a story where the Swatch guy says, no, the CEO, I think, said, no, we're not working with Apple. Sure, we've talked to them, but no, we're not working with them, you know. Yeah. So the rumors around this thing are just crazy. But I find it fascinating that this word iTime has come out now. And, you know, maybe we won't have a thing called iWatch, which is sort of stupid anyway, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could be.
iTime. Yeah. It's iTime.
It's iTime.
Miller time.
Well, this gets into a little biology geekiness, but there is all kinds of things that happen with your skin with respect to moisture and temperature and all of that. And one of the things they're going to have in this strap are biometric components so that you'll be able to read all the various things happening with things at the skin level, and GPS modules and Bluetooth and proximity sensors and all kinds of stuff. So it's going to be really interesting. This thing will probably be like $3,000, you know?
Yeah. So, with all the tech it's possibly could have in it, you start to wonder what the heck are they going to have to charge for this, you know?
Oh my God.
But we'll all line up to get one. So, well, yeah, not all of us, but
I won't.
We know who we are, Steve.
Yeah, right.
Well, I might. I don't know.
I don't know. My kids got me a great watch 2 years ago, and I wore it for about a month. And I can't stand having that stuff on. So I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Well, you don't have to. It's optional.
Well, of course. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, God. Well, this was a huge surprising, if anybody follows The Verge, which I'm sure anybody listening probably does, Josh Topolsky of The Verge is joining Bloomberg.
Yeah, I put this in because, you know, he had left with most of the staff of Engadget to build a gadget blog for the 21st century, you know, really cover not only the technology side of the gadget space, but the culture side as well. And The Verge is really a different kind of publication. And to see him leave after only a couple of years, and to go to Bloomberg, which is, you know, Bloomberg Business Week now, is, you know, traditional media. And to see him in a job where he's going to basically try to do the same kind of thing, but now in business news. So it's very interesting.
Well, but it's also, you know, the whole point for him is to build a 21st century media company, as he says.
Yep.
But I look at what he did at The Verge with the content management system they have through, is it Vox Media?
Yeah.
Yep. It's one of the coolest sites ever. In fact, I reached out to Vox to find out if it was possible to license the content management system. And never heard back from them.
So, yeah, no, they don't. They don't do that. That's part of their secret sauce.
Yes.
So it came out of SB Nation. So they built this content management system there, and then they refined it with The Verge and now Vox.com.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I really like it.
I don't think The Verge is going to change much. Neelan Patel was sort of Topolsky's right hand man, even at Engadget. So he's going to run the Verge now, and it'll probably be very similar to what we've been seeing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a great site. The Verge is tremendous. And, you know, but Topolsky is, you know, I'm sure he couldn't turn down the big offer and the opportunity, but I'm sure there's big money involved as well. So,
well, good for him. Yeah. The one thing about Bloomberg, if you ever, I don't know if you guys get the Bloomberg channel.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times.
But, you know, they've done quite a bit and you know, really leveraging Charlie Rose. And there's some good shows on there. I just almost always watch stuff on demand through the Bloomberg app. I hardly watch anything real time, frankly. But
there was a Bloomberg TV thing that what's her name out in the valley, out in San Francisco, used to interview. She probably still does interview startup CEOs, and that was really good. I used to watch that a lot, but I haven't lately. But I think that was just called Bloomberg TV app. Is that the one we're talking about? Is it the same one?
Yeah,
it's a channel too.
Yeah, it's a channel. It's available.
It's a channel
on the,
as well.
On the cable.
Well, yeah, it's a channel on cable, but also. You have a Roku, Tim. Is it on Roku? Because it's on Apple TV.
It's on Roku, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, and so I watch a lot of stuff just on demand.
Yep.
So it works great. So I this story you stuck in here, Tim, about the hackers hiding a money mining botnet in the clouds of Amazon and others, I thought was just hilarious.
Well, what I thought was I don't know, very creative about these guys who presented this at the Black Hat conference was that they built their botnet on top of free accounts at all sorts of cloud companies that use the Amazon cloud. So what they're doing is they're opening these free accounts, you know, thousands of them in quick succession, and then they're running apps on top. They're building their apps and doing the botnet stuff on top of it. But you know, to have it, I mean, it's one thing to build a botnet, you know, and buy your own servers and or you know, get your own accounts or whatever. But the sheer brilliance of doing this on top of free accounts. Now, you know, free accounts are limited by time or whatever. So they, you know, they couldn't do this for, well, I guess they could continue to open up free accounts. So they could do this for a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Amazon doesn't need this with the troubles they already have, you know.
But they were able to do Bitcoin mining and generate $1,750 a week. And basically was zero cost.
Zero cost, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's why I thought it was so funny, because it was, you know, when you think about all the logistics, I mean, to open up a free account, you have to have an email address.
Right.
So they had to have, you know, dozens and dozens a day, probably, of email addresses that they put together. I just thought, you know, and this is why it's so funny, because I'm sure you guys have been in the same position where you've crafted and rolled out a product, and if it can be gamed, it will be. Somebody will figure out how to game the thing. And, and it's just, you know, we did a thing where if you filled out this form on our site and then, you know, submitted it, then you would get the used Ajax, and you get the link to the download. and the download link was obscured, so you couldn't see the actual link. But all somebody did was go in and watch the download, which had the actual URL, grab the URL and send that around. So we had, you know, probably 150 downloads of this report, and we had no idea who downloaded them. Huh. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have to be, you really have to know what you're doing to be able to do that. But again, if there's a way around it, somebody's going to find a way to game it. So what a drag.
Happy to present it at the next conference, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, lastly, on the big stories, the House passed unanimously the ability to unlock our cell phones. Now, this is not going to be, if you know, if you're still under contract, you can't.
Well, it depends on your carrier. T-Mobile is one that you can, as long as you're have 90 days of whatever, in good standing.
Yeah. And for example, we can't. We have four phones on the family plan with AT&T, and with our upcoming trip to Italy, they won't unlock it. Any of them.
That's crazy. What are you gonna? I mean, I don't know. I guess they could say that they want you to buy their international service, I guess.
Well,
their rationale. But you're gonna have to. You're under contract, so you're gonna either have termination or pay for the service. So there's no difference as far as they're concerned. They're gonna make their same amount of money. Why would they want to piss you off?
Because they don't care. Because they don't care.
So maybe you just say, you know what? When this thing is done, screw you. We're going to Verizon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll take all four phones with me.
Well, so what I found interesting.
Maybe you should do that, Steve.
Well, I've threatened them before and it doesn't work. But I bought an iPad mini with LTE and Wi-Fi. And so I'll just buy a SIM card for that when I'm over there. And so at least we'll have one device that has a good connection. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. What I've decided, though, is in the future, I'm never buying a subsidized phone again. I'm going to pay full retail for it, you know. And I know most people can't do that, but.
It's expensive.
It is.
Especially if you're going to stick with the iPhone. It's $600-$700.
That's
right. They're doing it in China, aren't they? And if they can afford to, we should be able to.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's subsidized phones are probably, that whole concept is probably on its last legs, you know, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Won't be too many more years when that'll be gone.
Yep. Hey, are you hearing something in the background? Are you hearing a noise or are you hearing an announcement of some kind?
I'm hearing a security tip of the week.
Steve's security tip of the week.
Oh, that's what time it is.
Yeah, the horses was a nice addition.
You like
that
horse?
Was good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if you could hear it or not, but at any rate, here's the security tip of the week. Use two-step verification. And I will tell you that the first ones really to do this, and they actually have an app for it. And I put links in the show notes for the Google Authenticator for Android and iOS. Yep. And two-step verification is you put in your email address and password, and then you're prompted to put in a six-digit code, which is a rotating code that comes up in the Authenticator app. And that code is generated based on your phone, no one else's. You can also do what I do, which is print off the 10 extra codes just in case your phone gets stolen and you've got to have access. But sites, Gmail, obviously, Google works, but Apple's iCloud, Facebook, Twitter, Dropbox, PayPal, Microsoft accounts, WordPress, and a whole bunch more have already gone with two-step verification because, you know, at the end of the day, like Google spam guru Matt Cutts says, two-factor authentication is a simple feature that asks for more than just your password. It requires both something you know, like a password, and something you have, like your phone. And so you enter that second code and you're logged in. And sometimes it's a pain, because I use it for several of my accounts, LastPass, for example, in my Google account and others, but it's totally worth it because it's my wife, he was using a system in Germany in the press room at an event. And I noticed when she was on a plane flying home that somebody had logged into her Gmail account from California. Mm. I thought, okay, that's interesting. I wonder what, oh, geez, no. And so I immediately went in and changed her password, which would have locked somebody out. And it's because there obviously was a key logger on the press room computer and she had logged in that way. Well, now she can still use the press room computer, even though she never does, because of two-step verification, she'd be able to log in, but nobody else could, even if they had her password. So that's my tip.
Good one.
That's a good one.
All right.
Gonna do that.
All right. So now's the time for us to talk about our one cool thing of the week. And Phil's not here, so I guess we're not going to know what he thinks is cool. But
basketball.
Basketball with his daughter. But Graham, right. what do you think? What
well, you know, this isn't a huge deal, but the Square app, you all know Square. And I don't know, do either of you use it?
Yes.
Have you ever done like a garage sale or anything where you're taking people's credit cards? Yep. Okay. So they now have, and I don't know how new this is. It might just be new to me, but I got an email that we could do it, so I'm assuming it's new.
It is new.
So I have an account. They are now allowing an offline mode, which is very convenient for people doing outdoor events or people that have shaky internet or whatever. You can continue to take credit card transactions when your internet goes out, and later when your connection comes back on, they will, you know, grab those transactions and you know, apply them to your account. Now, of course, you're responsible for any bad credit card. You really should check the expiration date and make sure it's really the person whose card it right. says is the name on it. So, you know, you've got that one, you know, consideration, but we've tested it with the flaky, internet we have up here at the art fair booth, and it worked. I mean, later on in the day, sure enough, those charges come through. So I think it's pretty cool that the Square app is now offering that. But, it only has application for people that have internet that goes out. When you've got people lined up trying to buy things, whether you're a coffee shop or you're at a garage sale or an art fair booth or whatever, you don't want to say, oh, gee, sorry, my internet went out, and then they get ticked off and turn around and leave or something. Because a lot of people now just carry plastic. They don't carry cash, or they run out of cash. They surely aren't carrying checkbooks, so. Well,
this is a really good one. I'm glad you brought this up because I have a client who wanted to use Square with their iPad at an event to take registration from members and non-members. And there was no Wi-Fi available at the event, and this was not a a mobile-enabled iPad. Mm-hmm. And so now they could do it. This is cool.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It's worth signing up for. And you can limit the amount per transaction that you could get scammed for. I think it defaults to $100, but if you'd rather have it at 50 or 25 or whatever, and in a lot of cases you could set it at 20, maybe if you're selling, really low, low dollar amount items.
Yeah.
We just left it at the default of $100, and we haven't been scammed yet. People are pretty good up here in Ely, You're in Ely, you're good,
Yep. And Tim, how about yours? What's your
my cool thing of the week?
Your cool thing of the week.
It's an app called Overcast. It's for iOS, and it's a podcast app by Marco Arment, who is previously one of the lead developers at Tumblr when they first started up, and then he did Instapaper and the magazine, and this is his latest app. And you know, he's a podcaster himself, and has put in a bunch of interesting features. It's a very minimalistic podcast app. If you used other ones, I've been using Downcast on iOS, which has a ton of features, and this doesn't appear to have a ton of features, but they're all there. And his interface, although very spare, has gestures and all sorts of other things. And because the documentation is not, there's not a lot out there, you just have to use it to kind of discover some of the gestures and things to you know, here. But overall, I like it. He has two features which are kind of marquee features, which you have to pay to get. One called Voice Boost, which basically processes, normalizes it for the same amount, so you don't have high and low, and also raises the bass a little bit. But the one that's really interesting is called Smart Speed, which actually takes out all the spaces in the podcast, so you can listen to podcasts faster, and it doesn't sound, you know, terrible. Like when you do go to like 1.5, it always kind of speeds up. This actually works a little bit better.
Well, you know, can I just interrupt about that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I downloaded it 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And the one feature about the sound that I love, because you're right, it sounds great, but also sliding the volume slider works so much more smoothly than anything else I've ever used.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't, doesn't sound like a big deal, but there are sometimes like with the Twit app, and you're trying to slide the slider, and you're watching it jump from 13 minutes and 40 seconds to 28 minutes and 12 seconds. You know, it's like, wait, no, I didn't want to go that far ahead. But it's, you can't be that precise, but you can with this Overcast app.
I wish that they had a like a landscape view of that, so you could even be more precise.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The scrubber is really pretty good. It's better than most of them, but you have to do it. It's only in portrait mode, and you know the iPhone is so narrow anyway that you know you don't have a lot of real estate there.
Right.
But if you went landscape mode, you'd have a lot more space to scrub. Yeah. But anyway, it's free to download and to try out everything. And for some people, you won't want those extra features. So it'll continue to be free. But if you do, it's $4.99 in-app purchase.
Yep.
So,
okay.
So I like it. It's a good app. I listen to most of my podcasts on my phone, which is Android. So I'll continue to use Pocket Casts. But when I'm on my iPod, you know, I've been using this and I like it. It's a good app.
Cool. Yeah. I like it too.
It's his architecture, like Instapaper, is you know, he does everything on a central server. So for a podcast app, what that does is it saves you battery, so you're not consistently going out and you know, looking at the feeds and parsing the feeds locally.
Yeah.
So
okay.
So anyway, so I think that it'll also help battery life.
Well, speaking of battery life, we're going to lose Graham on his MacBook in his car. So I'll do mine real quick, and then we'll just wrap up the show. Mine is Nextiva. I was pretty agitated with RingCentral, who's been great for almost 5 years. But to do any changes or whatever, you got to deal with their Philippine tech support. And getting anything across conceptually is just so painful that it takes hours to get anything done. And I tried to buy a new phone system, a new voice over IP digital phone system, and it was such a cluster that I finally wrote an open letter to the CEO that then got some activity, and he must have said something to somebody, and they threw a technical manager at me, who was a great guy and walked me through, and we got everything set up and so forth. But it was such a horrible, painful experience that I started looking around for other VoIP providers and found one that's going to save me about $70 a month. So I've taken our telephony with AT&T.
That's real money.
AT&T and Quest is what we had back in 08, and when the economy crashed, we were spending $500-$600 a month on telephony. And when I went with Ring Central, we dropped that down. It's not only the same capability, but also, you know, a lot more capability with digital and unlimited extensions and all kinds of other good things. And dropped the price down to about $169 a month.
Nice.
And these guys, Nextiva, have all US-based support, sales and support. It's a much easier system to use, and I'm spending just a little over $100 a month.
Cool.
So it's pretty amazing. So that's
why. Yeah, it is.
Sounds good.
Good one.
All right. So what?
Well,
we talked about these events. Is there anything new this week?
Not new, but this week is Mini Demo 17. We'll be there Thursday night.
Thursday night, yep.
Absolutely. You betcha.
So I'll have to talk about it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will.
Everything is pretty much the same as normal in the notes.
Yeah, in the upcoming events all the way through October. I'm sure we missed some, but we'll try to get some more in there.
Do our best, yeah.
Next time, yep.
All right. Well, we'll... see everyone next week on
the Minivay Gang podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks. Take care.
Good one, guys. Talk to you later.